Renegade Health Radio.
Renegade Health Radio. This is Kevin Gianni with Frederick Patnaud. What's up, Fred?
Hey, guys. It's a winter day here in Montreal still.
I know. It is. You got to move to California, man.
Let me tell you, I would totally move to California if it were not for family and just having, you know, a life here. But yes, I was looking at the weather in San Francisco this week, and it almost made me cry.
Would you really cry?
At this point, almost, yes. I think I would have to go to visit and stay there for a while, and then I would cry. I would be like, "This is unbelievable! It's the same weather every day."
On the BART to the airport, you'd be in tears, cuddling next to whoever's sitting next to you.
Probably. I mean, this is how I feel every time I visit California. I'm like, it's not so much the warmth, you know, the warm climate, because it's not necessarily warm where you live. But it's the sunshine for me. That's the most important thing, the sunshine, you know? It's so amazing to see a clear sky many days in a row, right? Not just once in a while. So, yeah, I miss it.
There's a myth in the Bay Area here that at least the East Bay, people just think that it's always foggy. In the East Bay here, starting now until November, I mean, there's no fog. There's nothing. It's just sun. Every day, it'll probably rain three times until November. Now that's bad right now because there's a drought, but it's one of the most beautiful places in the country. But a lot of people just think it's just this foggy San Francisco thing. Mm-hmm. It's not. But the one thing, and before we have some good stuff for you guys today. We're going to get into this real quick, but I did want to bring up one more thing before we get into what we're going to cover. The thing that I noticed out here, I'm from Connecticut originally, and so East Coast, grew up there my whole life, lived there my whole life, lived in Atlanta for a little bit, but always on the East Coast. The first thing that I noticed when we first came out here in the RV, essentially, because that's when we spent a decent amount of time in California, more than like a week to San Diego that we took like after, you know, high school, graduation, you know, nothing like that, but like actually spent time in California, is that the avocados are so amazingly fresh and they're so green and they're just so creamy. And back East, you don't get avocados like that. You know, you cut open an avocado and it's got brown threads in it. It's half moldy. It smells weird. It maybe hasn't even ripened because they picked it too early and it's like still kind of hard, but rotted at the same time. Out here, every time you cut into an avocado that you get from the store, it is perfectly light green, creamy, delicious, all different types, Haas, Pinkerton, I mean, you name it, they got it here. And so it's just one of those things that you just don't know until you know. And then you go back and you're like, oh, I want to make guacamole at my mom's house. And I get some avocados and I go, maybe we'll just have something else.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. When I was living in San Diego in my early 20s, I was definitely eating way more avocados than I should have been eating because they were so good. And my favorite type was the Pinkerton, was just amazing. You can't find it anywhere else. Have you seen it like out East?
Not out East, no.
It's this delicious, amazing avocado. You can almost eat the skin. But I must say, Kevin, that it's true that East, you know, out East or outside of California, it's harder to get fresh produce. But where I live pretty close to a really good market where they import top quality fruit. And it's pretty much the only place I can go to buy avocados that I know are going to ripen perfectly, like the ones in California. But the only kind I can get are the Haas avocados and then maybe the Florida ones. But at least they're really good. I mean, they're perfect. They just ripen properly. They're creamy. They're exactly the way they should be. But I'm lucky because I have that market. Otherwise, I don't think I would even survive here.
Avocado, you would die of an avocado deficiency.
Yes, and fresh fruit, fresh fruit in general.
Oh man! So what do we got today? We have an interesting article that we want to discuss from National Geographic. It's about high protein and low protein type diets in middle-aged men and women. Fred, you want to lead with this thing? This is pretty interesting.
Yes, because it's an article that just came out, and it kind of is interesting because last week we talked about fasting, and I mentioned a study that was done on fasting where rats or mice were fasted or not fasted, and the group that was fasting resisted to chemotherapy treatments better for many reasons because the cells were protecting themselves from harmful toxins and so on. But I didn't mention who was the researcher behind that study, and his name is Walter Longo from the University of Southern California. He's originally from Italy, and he's one of the leading researchers right now in fasting research. And an article just came out last week, and it's a study from his team. So I thought it was really interesting. And the idea is they're looking at the effects of protein on human health because of a number of studies that were done prior to this. So what they found in this particular study is a diet rich in protein during middle-aged years, which is defined as between the ages of 50 and 65, leads to more premature death from cancer. And in fact, it's 4 times more death. So, and yeah, that's pretty extreme, and a 75% increase in mortality. Now, what's going on is that you look at populations, and sometimes you don't know what's the driving factor. So, if I find that a group of people is exercising a lot, and they also happen to be healthy and not die of cancer as much, is it because they're exercising? Is it the effect of exercise on their body that's causing this? Or is it that people who tend to exercise also tend to do other things like eat a healthy diet or live in a nicer neighborhood with not as much pollution? Who knows? So the researchers tried to take that into account, but it's not possible to take all of it into account. However, in this case, what I find interesting is what was behind the study. So behind the study is an interesting observation that there's a hormone that they found, or a molecule that acts like an hormone. It's not an hormone, but it's very similar. It's called IGF-1. So you're going to hear a lot about this if you follow health news. It's called insulin-like growth factor. And it's a hormone that the body produces naturally, especially early in life, because we need to grow, right? And it turns out that this hormone drives cancer. So what they found, which was very intriguing, was that there's a group of people in Ecuador that have a very specific genetic disease where they don't produce any IGF-1. So they just produce almost none of it. So they grow to be 3.5 feet tall, you know, which is very small. Mm-hmm. And they don't get cancer. These people never get cancer, ever. Even though they smoke, they have high rates of smoking and being overweight and even obese. But they don't get diabetes and they don't get cancer ever. Not even lung cancer. Even the smokers. So it turns out that it could be, it's in fact probably the reason why they don't get cancer is that they don't produce any IGF-1. Also, they've done studies on animals where if you have an animal with more IGF-1, they automatically get cancer or more cancer. It's not that it causes cancer, but if you have existing cancerous cells in the body, they will just grow much faster, leading to cancer. So it turns out that protein is the driving force behind IGF-1 production in the body. So the more protein you eat, especially animal protein, it's probably specific amino acids. It's probably not protein in general. It's probably very specific amino acids. It just makes the body produce more IGF-1. So that's why they found that people who eat a lower protein diet, and I'm going to define exactly what it is in a moment,
please do before all the paleo people start writing in and cursing us here.
Yes, well, that, you know, it seems to be the evidence. I'm not saying it means, you know, anything in terms of philosophy, but it's just, I think it's obvious that higher protein intakes drive cancer according to these studies, and it's being backed up more and more. So higher protein means over 20%. A high protein diet is a 20% of calories coming from protein. So I think that's very high, actually. You know,
that's a high. That is a high protein diet.
But I think if you're on a paleo diet, you're probably getting 20% protein. Moderate protein intake is 10 to 20%, and low protein diets is less than 10%. So they found that a low protein diet in middle age protects from cancer. That's kind of what they found. However, they found that after the age of 65, a higher protein diet doesn't necessarily protect from cancer, but it protects from early death for some reason. So people tend to get protective effects from a higher protein intake when they're older than 65. They don't know exactly all the reasons why and so on, because it's just a study on a population of people, but it could be because when you're older, you tend to be frailer and just, you know, a more, let's say, quote unquote, nutritious diet can help you at that point. So it's also, this study kind of also matches the results of the blue zones, where you find populations all over the world that are long lived, and they tend to eat this kind of diet where it's fairly low in protein compared to a standard American diet, and higher in plant foods like fruits, vegetables, and so on. So that's the study, and it just came out last week.
How ironic, or how synchronistic, that we were talking about it last week. You know what, I think I like to hack into these studies and kind of think about, you know, what other things are these researchers not thinking about? But you know what makes a lot of sense to me is it the reason that people in their, you know, post 60, so 65 plus, might need more protein is because generally the digestive system starts to slow down and there's lower HCL production. I'm wondering if this is an HCL issue. It's not necessarily, well, it is related to the high protein diet, but it's maybe related to the fact that, you know, that low protein diet, the protein or the amino acids aren't being absorbed as well anymore. So the individual needs to eat more protein in order to actually get what they need in terms of amino acids. And that seems to make a whole heck of a lot of sense to me as to why it would increase after someone turns 65, 70, or something like that.
It could also be because they're requiring so few calories per day compared to most people that it's harder to get all the nutrients and perhaps all the amino acids that they're eating. You know, if someone is eating like 1,200 calories a day, I mean, it's possible that if you increase the protein intake in that diet, you're going to increase the nutrition of the diet, possibly.
Yeah, and that's true too. It's a percentage base. It's not based on calorie intake. So if you decreased your calories and you decreased the volume of food and still ate the same amount of protein. So say you get to eat a piece of chicken or something like that, but you ate less vegetables and less salad, then your percentage would increase. But the amount of protein actually kind of remained the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the actual like grams of protein, that's an interesting kind of way to look at it too. So who knows? You know, who knows what goes on here?
But I mean, we don't know. But I think, I mean, if we look, let's say, how many calories do you think you eat in a day, Kevin?
Me? Yeah. You know, it depends. I'm training right now. So I'll probably eat around 3,000 a day.
So 3,000 plus or minus. Okay, so 20%, that's 600 calories divided by 4.5. That means you know, to be in the, you know, high protein range, you would have to eat like over 135 grams of protein a day.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, I think if you eat like a piece of steak is what, 50 grams of protein, like a big one. So, I mean, you kind of have to eat a lot of animal products to be in that range, I think.
Yeah, it seems like it, we don't judge diets anymore. We're done with that sort of stuff. We don't look at you and say, oh, your diet's wrong or your diet's right. That works for just about anyone. I mean, that works for, you know, a vegan who's eating plant-based proteins. That works for paleo who's eating, you know, animal-based proteins. I mean, it kind of works. It works for Mediterranean diet, who's eating more fish. It works for, Atkins, which is similar to paleo. I mean, you know, it kind of all works, I think, across the board. I think that we're coming to this understanding that, like, you know, that people got to eat a lot of plants. It's like, you know, eat the plants. They're good. And then if you want some protein, you can get it from multiple different types of sources. Multiple different types of sources. What the heck does that mean?
Exactly. I mean, I just wrote an article that hasn't been published yet, but it's probably going to be more from my website, Kevin, but we'll see. It's an article on the myth of variety, or the myth of the balanced diet, in a sense. So I was kind of playing with numbers, and I like to play with nutrition numbers. And I was looking at, you know, let's say you were to design a diet of only like three foods, right? And as long as you're eating a lot of greens, I could pretty much not design a diet that was deficient. It was insane. I was coming up with weird combinations, like only bananas, spinach, and, you know, like kidney beans or something, like three things like that. And I mean, if you're getting enough calories from those foods and you're eating enough greens, let's say like a pound a day or something, you're just scoring through the RDAs just like crazy. You're just having 135, 300, 400, 500% of the daily values that we're supposed to get in all the different nutrients like vitamin C and so on, magnesium. So it's pretty clear that plants are very nutritious in minerals and vitamins. As long as you eat enough of them, it's pretty difficult to design a diet that's truly deficient as long as you eat like a few different kinds of foods. I mean, that's what I found.
And you know, the variety thing doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. And you know, we talked about not going into the past to look at your diet sort of thing before. We've talked about this, Fred, you and I. But I mean, if you look at cultures that are kind of landlocked or isolated, like, you know, the Okinawans and Sardinians and you know, some of these people in the blue zones, they had a variety of diet, but they don't have all different types of food shipped in from all different types of places like we do. You know, they don't have goji berries in Sardinia, and they don't have, raw chocolate in Japan, right? So they're not growing that stuff there, at least in these isolated communities. And we've spent, Anne-Marie and I have spent time in Peru in the Andes with the Quero, that's Q'ERO. And they don't eat a wide variety of food either. They essentially eat potatoes, and not the white big old potato, the sugar bomb that we all know about, that you can get, at like Wendy's or, you know, some of these places, or just like your local grocery store. These are like real potatoes, all different sizes, all different colors, purple potatoes, red potatoes, yellow potatoes. I mean, just amazing colors and amazing flavor too. I mean, some of them taste really, really unique. So they eat all these different types of potatoes because that's really the base of their diet, because it grows up there. They eat alpaca from time to time. So, you know, they'll go out and slaughter an alpaca and they'll eat the alpaca and then, you know, eat just about all of it, just like most cultures do. And then they chew coca leaves, right? And so coca leaves are super high mineral leaves. They're a green leaf. You know, you might know coca leaf from two things. One, from it used to be the original ingredient in Coca-Cola. And I believe they still use it, but they do it without the alkaloid, without the cocaine alkaloid. And then it is used to eventually, after they process it down using kerosene and all these different types of acids, to make a paste, which is eventually used to make cocaine. So they chew these coca leaves. It's also very medicinal. It's something that they use for altitude sickness. And a lot of these people are adjusted now, so they don't really need to do it for altitude sickness, but energy too, just because it is a lower oxygen environment up there. So they eat these things. And, you know, there's maybe a few other things that they bring into their diet, but they're strong, able and capable people. Now, in a modern society, they have challenges, right? So they're not as healthy and you know, they definitely like to eat sugary and salty and sweet things now that they can get, you know, as they come down from the mountains. But overall, this is what they've eaten for a long time, and they've survived. So I definitely believe in the myth of variety, because because there's just not that much up there. And, you know, they seem to be pretty healthy, at least the ones that are still sticking to the regular diet.
It seems to be like that everywhere, right? I spent a lot of time in Costa Rica, and I think one of the areas of Costa Rica is one of the blue zones. And I don't think people eat a very varied diet. I mean, rice and beans and, you know, little chicken and cabbage. I mean, cabbage is pretty much the only vegetable that they eat besides tomatoes and so on. But you'll never find a head of kale over there. You know? And I don't think we need all those fancy foods necessarily, which kind of brings me to an interesting question. What are your desert island foods, Kevin? Like, what, you know, if you could only live on a couple of foods, what would those be?
Oh man, Emery's mom's eggplant. No, I'm just joking. we were talking about this. Emery Colomeo. Colomeo is her maiden name. Gianni's now, you know, the name that she uses because we're married. But we were talking about this at lunch on Wednesday in our office. So we got all our team members in the office together, and we all asked the question, you know, like, what's your favorite food? And that was it. That's why that came up first. But I would definitely bring something for hydration. So I'd probably bring like a coconut water or coconuts. I think that is something that I would probably have. And then I would definitely look for really high nutrient, high calorie type foods. And, you know, some of these, it'd probably be, some of them would definitely be animal products. So something that's higher in fat, higher in protein, something that could sustain me. And, I don't know, these potatoes that are up in the Andes. I mean, if I could bring those, I mean, I would like to try to live on this Andean diet here, the coca, the potatoes and the alpaca, because you can easily, what they do with the potatoes, they call it watia. And they dig pieces of mud and they make like a little igloo. It's probably only about 2 feet tall by about 3 feet wide, or maybe 3 feet by 3 feet. And it looks like this little igloo with an opening at the base where the igloo meets the ground. And then they put a lot of sticks in there and they start a fire, and then they get those hot coals going. And so they could be doing this for, I don't know, an hour maybe. And there's a video on Renegade Health. If you search Watia, I'm going to space on how to spell it right now, Watia or something like that. And so they get the coals going and get really hot in there. You look in, it's like red, white. It's so hot in there. And then what they do is they throw all the potatoes that they have in there. So maybe like maybe a couple pounds of potatoes. And then they break the igloo down. So the mud, you know, the mud bricks kind of fall onto the coals and the potatoes in there. And then about 45 minutes later, you know, you pull the mud off, and then they reach in and grab the potatoes out. And you know, I'm sitting there, the first time I saw this, I'm sitting there, watch them do it. And I'm like really excited about it. I'm filming it. I'm like, this is the coolest thing. This, you know, we don't do this in the US, you know, we need to go back to our, you know, some sort of native culture and really do things that mean something, that require work, like, you know, really put work around our food. And so after we're done and they collapse it and the potatoes are done and we pull the mud off, you know, Sebastian, who's a, you know, Carol shaman that we've gotten to know, he starts reaching in to these coals and just grabbing these potatoes. And I'm like, oh, let me help. And I reach in and I grab one of these potatoes, and it is the hottest thing that I've ever grabbed in my life. And I like squeal, you know, and throw it down. And he looks at me and he just shakes his head. And I'm just like, oh man, I'm like, suave, suave. You know, I'm just like, my hands, because he speaks a little bit of Spanish, very, very little Spanish, but, you know, we speak it like, you know, one word kind of communication. And I'm like, suave, suave. And he just laughs, you know, like, just like this, you know, this American's hands just can't even handle the hot potatoes. But
yeah, you're like the weak gringo, right?
Oh my gosh, I know. I'm the weak gringo wherever I go. I'm the weak gringo when I walk out here into Berkeley.
Oh, those potatoes sound really good. I mean,
it's so good. They're just and they're nutrient dense. You know, you can just tell. I mean, they have antioxidants. Some of them have this really deep purple color. That's an antioxidant in a potato. I mean, you know, this is like not, again, this is not your russet Idaho potato that's, you know, 1 pound itself. And it's just, you know, this huge carbohydrate bomb with little or no nutrient profile. Oh, you know what else is crazy too? This is something that I think about a lot, is that they peel the skin off the potato.
Oh,
every
yeah.
single one. They peel the skin off. And it could be because you know, there's like, you know, alpaca and all these animals walking around, or it could be because it was just in this big pile of dirt and charcoal and, you know, whatever. Or it could be the fact that they just have realized over time that maybe the skin isn't that great.
I think skin is overrated. I mean, not
human skin.
Fruit peels and so on, because it's just, you know, I get a little bit upset when I hear people say, you know, the best part of the apple is the skin, you know, and eat the peel of everything. And yes, I mean, if you analyze, you know, nutritionally speaking, which means you take all this food and you burn it down and then you analyze the ashes, yes, the peel is definitely more nutritious. But what really matters is what we can assimilate. And often in the peel is just very tough fiber. So I don't think you get much out of it. And it depends. I mean, I think like grape skins, for example, I think they're just undigested. Tomato skins, they're undigested. I mean, whatever there is in the peel, we just don't digest it. And it's the same for a lot of peels, like many fruit peels. And yeah, even apple peels, not all of them, you know, some are very thin and so on, but some actually peel, like a Macintosh apple. I will always peel them. And people look at me, you're crazy. You're throwing away the most nutritious part of the apple. Well, just peel a bunch of apples and then eat only the skin. Eat the peel and just realize, you know, it's actually pretty tough and nasty.
Yeah. And see what comes out the other end.
Yeah. I think, yes, you know, maybe you're throwing away some nutrients, but I think you get plenty from whatever is in the pulp of the fruit. And even, I mean, you look at monkeys, they peel everything, including grapes. So I trust monkeys.
That was a classic statement. We need to put that one on the highlight reel there. Frederick trusts monkeys. The other thing too is, you know, yeah, okay, so the apple peel is the most nutritious thing. I mean, but are you only eating apples and then you're missing out all your nutrients from the apple peel? I mean, what if you eat an apple that's peeled and then you drink a green juice? Whatever nutrient was in the apple peel, it doesn't really matter anymore. You know, I mean, this is a very myopic or a very like short-sighted view of nutrition instead of looking at the larger picture. And like Fred said earlier, if you're eating all different types of foods or you're eating enough calories, and you're not like going really kind of askew on your diet and not doing like really strange things like Frederick and I both have done before, you're going to get a lot of the nutrients that you need, particularly the macronutrients, and a ton of the micronutrients, you know, skyrocketing above a lot of the RDA and whatever those organizations are that think they know what they're talking about when it comes to what people should eat. So it's really one of those things where, you know, you can go too far down the rabbit hole and then suddenly end up on the other side just eating apple peels and not being healthy. And then you're like, well, what the hell happened? You're like, well, you know, you went too far. you got too short-sighted.
Exactly. And I must say also, I mean, that peel a peach and it's pure heaven. Just saying, next summer, guys, try a perfectly ripe white peach and peel it and then eat, you know, just the pulp. And it's like the best thing ever. So
I think the peach peel is there just so when you bite into it, you know, the liquid only just comes out of, you know, the area that you've bitten into and not just like everywhere. Peach is like a sponge. Yes. You know what I mean? It's like if it was peeled, you just squeeze, if you don't cut it, you squeeze it. And just like, I just imagine just peach juice just coming all over my hands. Oh my gosh. You know what the best peaches in the world are though? They're Palisades peaches. These are peaches that are from the west side of Colorado. and near Grand Junction. And I had never heard about Palisades peaches. Someone told us about them as we were kind of going through Utah. And they said, you know, hey, you have to stop and get a Palisades peach in Colorado. And we were just like, all right, you know, that's fine. We've never heard about it. And we drive right, I think it's I-70, you drive right into Colorado and you start seeing these signs for Palisades peaches. And it's just a really, it's a kind of a little bit of a valley where it's kind of a, it's still desert-ish kind of land. And, but in this valley, there's a river, and I don't know what river it is. I'm sorry if I'm geographically challenged here. I don't know what river it is, but it's coming through the mountains there. And it's a really lush valley where they grow these amazing peaches. And these things are like custard. You get them and you put them in the fridge and you get them cold and then you eat them and they're like eating custard. I mean, you can almost eat them with a spoon.
Wow.
The Palisades.
It's one of those things. I mean, I'm always jealous when there's a fruit that I hear about that I've never tried. Because I've tried
forget
a lot of different
about
fruits.
Forget being jealous about an ex-girlfriend, you know, meeting up with someone else. It's like, if there's a fruit that you haven't tried, it's this epic kind of emotion.
Oh, yes, yes. I've had white peaches and I've had Saturn peaches and... Do you know flat peaches?
They're called the ones Saturn, that almost look like the ones that kind of look like what would you look like? A little I don't know, like a
flat
pincushion
cake
kind
or
of
something.
Thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Those are great when they're properly when they're not supposed to be pasty, they're supposed to be sweet and juicy like regular peaches. Yeah. So if you get them like that, they're perfect. But
all right. I think it's time to close this up. We appreciate you guys listening. Fred, when's this going to be up on iTunes?
I think within a week.
All right, cool. So guys, check us out on iTunes if you want to download this. If you don't know how to do it on the blog here, if you want to download this on iTunes, it should be up pretty soon. And then you can get it downloaded to your iThing regularly. So, hey, we'll catch you
Sound
next
good.
Week. Adios, guys.
All right. Adios.
Bye.